They are recording.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, or good morning still, excuse me. I'm Dave Ramsey. I'm chairing the Leon County Research and Development Authority's Board of Governors meeting. It is today, February the 7th, and the time is 11:06. So, welcome to the meeting. This time, I will make introductions. Thomas, where's Thomas? Thomas, introduce yourself to us, please.
Hey, Thomas Whitley. I'm the Chief of Staff for Mayor Daley. He got called out of town at the last minute today, so we'll come on his behalf.
Thomas, did you work with John before?
I was with John at the county for a little bit before we came over to the city.
Yep. Okay.
Thomas didn't even get a year in. That's what we were just talking about, to get the county system in. Now we've got city.
Yes. Yep. I don't know whether you upgraded or downgraded, but I'm going to sign that after a few months. Welcome. You're invited to come anytime. We hope John can be here most of the time, but in his absence, you will probably be the one most likely to fill in.
Yes.
Okay, good.
But just to make clear, though, there's not for voting purposes.
Right.
Just for...
Yep. For information purposes.
Yep.
Okay. Any other guests that should be identified? Let's go ahead and... identify everybody in the room over here from outside the organization.
Stephanie Blaine with Halcor.
And I think that's the only other one I see in here. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
No.
And is there any public comment that anyone wishes to speak now? And you have received a copy of the draft minutes of the December the 6th meeting. Chair has read those, reviewed them. They look appropriate to the chair, but if you have additions, deletions, modifications, please speak up now. Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any further relative to approving the minutes of the December 6th meeting? Those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. Motion carried. This time I'll present the consent agenda. Consists of the executive committee report, the treasurer's report, the financial reports, investment reports, HVAC preventive maintenance agreement, Collins building renovation, and what else?
That's all.
That is all. Okay. Again, those have been provided to you for your pre-reading and understanding and thorough opportunity to suggest revisions if you need to. If not, no one wants to pull it in. We'll ask this consent agenda to be approved. Motion's made. Is there a second?
Second.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. Motion carries. Let's talk about the EDA grant and an update on it.
It's short and sweet. Okay? The short and sweet is we have no new information. Basically, we were told before Christmas that they were working on the announcement letters, and then the shutdown happened, and they came back and they said we're working on the announcement letters. So, you know, they'll give us no timeline. It's just when it happens, it'll happen. So it sounds like it's close. I think the fact Michael and I have been trying to read the tea leaves, but it's better to not know than to be told you didn't get it. So at this point, we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
The only thing to add is I check daily to make sure that they don't tweet or blog something before we know it. And so we're up to speed.
Is there anything like the Federal Register or anything they publish that in the morning of? Or?
It gets announced, and then, later in the year they'll publish where everything
went. But it's not pre-published before we get the letter.
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I haven't seen it that way before. We'll get the letter, and then it'll be published.
Okay.
If it's bad news, is there a revision process where we can try again?
It's a rolling process, but I think there's another opportunity probably going to be.
For the same dollar.
So this status is the same thing that others are caught in right now, who are about to hear something before the shutdown. So that, I'm hearing that from others. The amount was higher because it was a disaster supplement. So our thinking is there will be another opportunity if with a new disaster supplement. I think they just announced the regional innovation grants last week. So that's $3 million cap, is that right? On the regional innovation? Yeah. So that's where we would have been but for disaster supplements. So, waiting to hear on that.
Michael, do you know from your history with this organization whether it's an all or none or sometimes it's a partial?
Sometimes it's partial.
Okay.
And a lot of times they, as a matter of process, they'll eliminate something. And in our case, I don't think they will because the something is usually equipment or additional personnel funding or something like that. And that's always added as a hopeful thing, and then it gets cut out. So I have seen that in the past, but this is a rather large amount of funds we're asking for, so I couldn't address that part of it. The ones I've seen before in disasters between 5 and, say, 9 million get funded pretty well. The other thing, Eric, to answer, go a little bit further with that is, with the latest hurricane that came through with Michael, there's likely to become another disaster declaration. And then we could go after this similar amount if the guidelines allow.
Or the difference, or whatever. Yeah. Okay, any further questions regarding...
Just make a comment that my impression is, from what I've heard, that once you get to this far along, it's just a matter of time. And secondly, the shutdown didn't really stop any of the processing. It stopped the top-level signatures. And the letters are on those, yes. So I've got my fingers crossed.
Well, that's good.
I think it's going to be.
Are you suggesting that if it was no, we probably would have heard by now? Or okay.
And typically, again, and maybe there's no typical, and maybe you don't know this, but does that generally come as an electronic letter to us quickly, or we get the mail one day and open it up?
Well, I've never received one, but
give me a call.
I bet you could call, but I don't know that.
Yeah.
And we do have that relationship with Craig Bidet, and he did tell us that he would call us as soon as he had something to tell us.
Greg helped shepherd projects through to, I'd say, the Atlanta office and then kind of steps back once it moves on beyond there. But yes, I would anticipate he's quick to respond to us, to other orgs in Florida. It's great.
Good. Yeah. All right, any further question on the grant update? Hearing none, let's move on to the nonprofit incorporation. As you were in the meeting last month, 2 months ago, you know that we set up to attempt to set up to establish the 501c3, and we now need documents to support that, bylaws, covenants, and so on and so forth. This time I'll turn the meeting over to council for a presentation.
Yes, thank you. For the benefit of those that may not have been here last summer when the nonprofit concept was originally presented in PowerPoint format by Ron, when Paul and others graciously hosted us over at Danfoss, we had proposed a 501c3 nonprofit structure that was going to fall under an organizational structure that we call a 509A3, which is a subtype essentially. And that concept is often referred to as a supporting organization. And the concept was that the new nonprofit would essentially support LCRDA. And there were two reasons that we had initially proposed the structure. The first is because it accomplished LCRDA's concern about establishing or maintaining control over the nonprofit so that the nonprofit didn't act independently or potentially go rogue, if you will, with the mission and purpose and potentially funding of the nonprofit. The second reason that we wanted to create under a 509A3 structure is because it automatically allows the nonprofit to qualify under the IRS review as a public charity. And that is as compared to a private foundation. And we want the nonprofit to have public charity status because if it's a private foundation, potentially the donor's contribution is does not receive the same beneficial tax exemption treatment. So those were the two reasons that we wanted to have a 509A3 structure. In
the alternative to the 509A structure is the regular?
That's right. That's exactly right.
And there is a possibility that a 501c3 could receive a contribution from a taxpaying entity and the taxpaying entity did not receive the benefit of it?
They would. They wouldn't receive the same full exemption.
If it was a foundation.
It was a foundation. And I'm getting to the punchline, which is we're not going to do that. So you'll hear me out. Once we left the board meeting and started actually putting pen to paper, we realized that there were some issues with creating a 509A3, namely that the supported organization, which is LCRDA, has to be a public entity that possesses sovereign power. And that would be the ability to tax, the ability to have police power, and the ability of essentially condemnation in eminent domain. And LCRDA is organized, as you guys all know, under 159, Florida statutes, and unfortunately that statute does not grant any of those sovereign powers to LCRDA. It does grant the ability to issue bonds under the statute, and there is some case law that suggests that the ability to issue bonds is, I don't want to say close enough, but very similar to a sovereign power that might qualify you. But rather than take the risk of filing documents with the IRS that ultimately got rejected or could result in the loss of nonprofit status, I'm making the recommendation that was adopted by the executive committee in a meeting last week that we just simply organize under the 501c3 nonprofit structure. And doing so still allows us to achieve the two same goals that we had under the alternative structure, which is that LCRDA will still be able to maintain control over the nonprofit entity, and provided we do a sufficient job in our documents to the IRS and our governing documents in basically evidencing the charitable nature of the nonprofit, we won't have an issue with the distinction between charitable status versus private foundation. So I wanted to just briefly, and I know you've all had the documents in front of you, and I'm sure you probably stayed up very late last night reading them, or at least again this morning. But I wanted to just point out the highlights of those so that you've got the reassurance that we've done that through our draft documents. The first is the organizational action, which is the two-page document, which appoints your first three initial directors. This is attachment D3 in your agenda materials, and it appoints David Ramsey as president, Kim Williams as vice president, secretary, treasurer is April Salter. So the initial appointment of directors will all be obviously members of this board. Yeah, please.
Just to go back, I think originally we had talked about having maybe a member of the board. As we started thinking about that, and considering the fact that we determined that we would be under sunshine with the nonprofit, we felt it didn't make a lot of sense for me to have those kinds of restrictions by being a member of the board. So I will, though, serve as the executive director over the 501c3 as well.
So the first three officers, again, are members of the LCRDA board. The board is allowed to increase the total number of directors, but LCRDA has the sole approval right to increase the total number, and that's in Section 2A of your bylaws of Innovation Park, which is attachment D2, page 3.
Oh.
I don't know.
Thanks.
I just happened to look. It's a good picture. Attachment two, page. Yes, there you go. Perfect. I'm looking at it. So we have the language here that, again, basically says that the board can increase the number of its directors, provided, though, that LCRDA must approve in writing the increase in the number of directors. And if you scroll down further to Section 3, if there's vacancies in the board of directors, for death, resignation, disqualification, additional members can be appointed by affirmative vote of the majority of the board, but again, that LCRDA has the right to appoint the majority of the directors, so at no time there can be, the majority always has to be those that have been appointed by LCRDA. And then we have additional language in Section 10, which is on page 6. Yes. So if for some reason all of the board is removed simultaneously, let's hope this doesn't happen. The RDA still has the ability to appoint the majority of the new directors. And I believe we have one more clause, which I am calling the savings clause. So if it really all just goes to pot, we have this language at the very end of our document on 12 of 12, which prohibits the nonprofit board from amending or terminating these articles without the approval of LCRDA. So they can't go, the board can't go in and basically undo all of these protections that we put in the documents. So that addresses the issues about the control that LCRDA will have over the nonprofit. And then if you'll look at the articles, it's attachment D1.
It's actually G. I think you got the exact
document. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right. It's, yeah, attachment G.
My apologies. For the
G1.
Yes. So this is the language that we built in. Thanks to Ron and Michael's good writing skills here. And this, we believe, successfully accomplishes the goal of describing the nature of the organization that will demonstrate the charitable purpose. So this is the recommendation, is that basically we modify the structure. It's still a nonprofit, still achieves the goal of maintaining control by LCRDA or over the organization, and addresses the concern about the charitable nature of the organization. This is what we had proposed in our documents, which were approved by the executive committee, I believe, last week.
That's great. Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me, my mouth's full. You had a presentation of the documents which you have instructed the executive director and council to prepare. The chair has reviewed those. Not being an attorney, it looked good to me. It would have anyhow. I have utmost confidence in our legal counsel. I will tell you that they started down one path and were going that direction, then they realized maybe that's not the best way to go and came back and started a new direction. They ate an awful lot of expense doing that. We did not incur some of that research and evaluation at all. I think that speaks well to the ethics of our council that we have. I'm proud of you. I thank you for this presentation. The floor is now open for any discussion. Is there a motion to approve these documents? Move approve. Is there a second?
I'll second that, and I'll just piggyback on what you said, Mr. Chair. We had a lengthy discussion in executive committee about this and getting into the distinction and everything. So just wanted to put that in the record, because I'm glad everybody might be supportive of this, but I'm also glad we took the time to dig into some of those things.
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor that these documents be approved. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Both by like sign, motion carries.
Mr. Chair, one item that we didn't really get into the motion, now that we have these documents and we're ready to file them, we do need to go ahead and start setting up some of the business. So we'll get those filed, but then we'll also need to put together the application for the 501c3 status.
There goes the IRS.
Yes. And we may need some funding to do things like establish the D&O insurance policies and things like that. So I would request approval to fund any necessary expenditures to incorporate the entity and get the 501c3 status, to establish a bank account, and to do all the other things necessary to establish the business.
I move that.
Second. Motion presented. There is a motion on the floor with a second. Those in favor of allowing our executive director to proceed with the process of beginning the business and establishing the financials and so on and so forth, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign, motion carried. Let me ask now, I'm not looking for recommendations today, but it is my opinion that we're going to need to do much like we've done here. I think we have exceptionally good, strong board at this table. I'm very, very impressed with the people that sit here. We're going to need an exceptional board for the 501c3. It would need different qualifications, maybe, than some of us in this room have. It would need some expertise that not all of us present or have. I would ask that you begin thinking about who would be appropriate to sit on that board that would help move that organization forward and begin to provide anything that you might have to our executive director. That's just a process of beginning to think of who would lead us in this organization.
Mr. Chair, I've asked Michael to start the process of detailing the responsibilities of the board, as well as looking at a potential advisory group who can handle some of the more administrative pieces, like determining who gets, you know, which entities get admitted to the incubator, those sorts of things. So he's going to lay out those roles and responsibilities, and we'll get that information to the board so they can use that in their process of figuring out who they think might be good for the board, if that's helpful.
And you're thinking those people would be a committee of that board, not necessarily the board members? Or are you thinking those would be the board that would approve who all gets in the organization?
Well, that's part of what we're looking at, but we think that number one, should not be a sunshine board. We think it should be more of an extension of staff and staff duties, and that admission to the incubator probably isn't a board role. So that's something that once we get those laid out, we'll review with council and make sure that we stay within the requirements of Sunshine. But as you know, when we start talking about companies and their businesses, that's probably not the best place for a Sunshine board. So there are exclusions in the Sunshine Law that allows us to do some of that business in the shade, but if we don't need to have a Sunshine Board to do these sort of administrative type duties, where it's advantageous to have a IP lawyer and some other folks with particular business skills to have them on an advisory group that's not limiting any of the board's decision making process, but really serving staff, then I think we ought to do that to the extent that we can. It's permissible.
I don't disagree with that. I do, though, still believe that we have a real obligation, a real opportunity to seed that thing with expertise in this community. Many of you have probably names in mind. I'm not looking for those today. But surely the universities, surely Ray, some of your experience you've had, maybe people like Steve Evans or others who I can think of. Who was the other candidate we considered at one time?
Bill Holloman.
Holloman.
Here we
are. People like that, I think, would just really add credentials to our organization that would support and complement this board of directors as well. So be thinking of names. Pass those on to Ron by email. We won't talk about them here, but there will be a day when we'll need to start thinking and sorting through those and coming up with the board of directors. We have the first three, and those are the three members of the executive team to start the thing off. Question? Or comment?
Yeah. Ron, Melissa, just going back to the Sunshine question real quick. By virtue of having multiple board members on the nonprofit board, on the foundation board, we had taught the exec that would be a Sunshine board. It keeps within the rules. Did you say you're going to look at that?
Yes.
How an advisory committee could work in the future?
Not a committee, an advisory group.
An advisory group, right. That was, we went through the advisory group versus advisory committee and stuff. That's going to be interesting to see.
The key is, what is the role and responsibility of the board?
Yeah.
Okay, and if that group limits the choices that come back to the board for approval,
right,
then yes, that would be a Sunshine
but committee. You're saying that if they work directly with staff just on vetting people who are in the incubator or not, it may not have a board decision.
Right. That's okay. More of a staff function than a board function. That's what we'll have to look at, and the important first step is for Michael to look at where we think those roles and responsibilities belong, getting with Melissa and figuring out if that fits.
I just wanted to see if I was thinking about it right. So good.
Yeah. Okay. So we just think there's a way to structure it so that we get the decision making in the right place and where it's appropriate.
Yes. Okay.
But definitely something that will come back that the new board will have to decide how that actually is implemented. So we're also starting to look at developing policies and procedures and all those other things that the new board will have to approve.
Okay.
Ann, did you have a question or comment?
Okay.
We pick on everybody chewing. You got a sandwich in your hand and about putting your mouth or already.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll take it back. I assume that this description of who is wanted is going to include whether or not the wanted people are fundraisers. Yeah, I think that's the one thing I don't actually understand.
Very good point.
I don't know whether that's what we're trying to do or not.
Well, we're trying to do, I guess, the technology people. But Ann brings up that board certainly ought to have some fundraisers on its.
Well, that's my assumption. Yes. And I guess that's a correct assumption.
I think that's always for a nonprofit. That's always an excellent assumption.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah. And that might be one of the criteria that we put in there that you are willing to seek out donations on behalf of the organization if you wish to serve on that board.
As a current chair of a 501c3, I can tell you how much fun that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll turn people off. But you know, if they're not going to be willing to do that front, we need to know that up front.
Well, you don't need everybody to be fundraising.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
That's it.
But you need to have people who can speak and advocate for it.
But you need at least a committee of fundraisers out of that group. So two or three people that would be willing.
People who know how to find money, like Ray Biden used to do all the time at the university. He knew how to find more money than maybe anybody else in this town. So welcome to the board, Ray.
Glad I'm here and not on that other one.
Do we also want to look at people who may have a crosswalk to other organizations in town who are in touch with entrepreneurs and so forth, like someone from Domi, for example, who is in that ecosystem that might be able to help us do some sorting as to the best type of person or, you know, elevation once they're ready to move on from one entity to another?
There's kind of two things I'm hearing, but we're talking in terms of board members, and I think we're talking sometimes in terms of committee members.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people that you've mentioned might be better served in some committees rather than on boards, but all of that is welcome for discussion and input, and I would encourage each and every one of you to find a name or two and present it to Ron. He can scrub it pretty good, I found. Any other questions regarding the adoption of the legal document for the Innovation Park TLH, Inc.? Hearing none, those in favor of accepting the report and executing, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign, motion carries.
I think it had already been
approved.
I'm sorry?
Already been approved. Now we've double approved it.
That unproven if you prove it.
That means you've got to have two disapprovals now. Okay, tech grant pitch night discussion. Who would lead that?
That would be me.
I thought you.
Yeah, I'll just to introduce it. After the last elevator pitch night, the board asked to have an opportunity to have a discussion about how we might better promote Innovation Park at the elevator pitch night. And we are now in the process, and by we, I mean Denise, is in the process of planning the event. And we thought this would be an opportune time to hear any thoughts from the board on what they think ought to be happening at elevator pitch night to help promote Innovation Park.
So one thing that I am doing right this year is I'm working with the Math Lab, and instead of doing three Tech Grant winner updates, I'm doing one 2-minute promotional video of the park, which will be playing at the event. That's probably the biggest thing that is going to be changed. We are also going to be having different banners and stuff that we have for each of our events. We've had those up before as well last year. So I am seeking more input for other ways that maybe we can talk a little bit more and highlight the park more at the event.
So are we trying to get more people to come to the event, different kinds of people to come to the event?
So I think we are trying to overall kind of highlight public awareness of what is going on at Innovation Park, potentially highlight some of the other events that are going on that can be piggybacked from Tech Grant pitch night. But overall, it's really going to be just what we're doing here and what organizations and what the park is.
And so we get 100 to 125 people to attend. So we get as many eyeballs in front of us, and mm-hmm. well, two times that. But to see, you know, what's going on out here. So we think it's an opportunity to do that. But again, this was a suggestion from the board to discuss this. So.
Question. I think it was just last year, but the you had video updates of past tech grant winners in between the different pitches, which was really a nice way to show the growth of some of those past winners. I wonder if you're planning on doing that again. I'm not sure I want to lose. We want to lose that, but that's an opportunity to.
So the Mag Lab does three videos for us as part of their sponsorship. One of them is going to be the 2-minute promotional video, but we're still going to have two tech grant winner updates.
Okay.
So we'll have one more spot, and there that we're going to figure out something to do with. So.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere on this campus that that could be relocated and presented from here versus Goodwood?
No. Not at this time.
I will tell you that the event has been, the venue has been secured.
Yes. Okay. For this year.
Yeah, we have to do that pretty quick. So.
Yeah.
In the future.
Certainly in the future. And we did look at one other venue.
I looked at the Alumni Center, which would have been another viable option, but I figured this year would just be okay continuing. We might grow next year or in the future at some point.
So one thing, and you may already be doing this, but maybe having tables or exhibits from the various entities at the event?
We do that.
You do that?
Yes. Okay.
Well, the various entities that are tech grant finalists.
No, Mag Lab.
Yeah.
You know, some of the, especially the technology-focused entities that are here in the park where they could come and it would be a chance for them to spotlight and also, you know, tell the bigger story of Innovation Park. You know, maybe they present for a minute about what they're doing in Innovation Park or the coolest thing that's happened in the last 5 years, you know, or something like that. Some way to have them be a part of it.
I guess I was thinking along the same lines. There's a third video, or no, that is the three videos.
Yes.
The two there. Okay. I was wondering if, I mean, a video of, you know, from National Park Service to DOT, you know, just people don't know what's out here.
Yeah. Isn't that what the third video is? The third video that they're going to do is
a promo for
Innovation Park.
Yes.
Is it going to feature some of the members of the park?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Especially in B-roll, I'm going to do a voiceover. I have not actually created the script yet, but we'll have different highlights.
Maybe you could do giveaways at the event that are like behind the scenes tours with the National Park Service to see the cool things they have out here, or behind the scene tours with the Mag Lab. You know, do something that allows you then to talk about it, and anybody who's there drawing has a chance to win.
Okay.
I think the biggest challenge is how do we get the media more involved in it. Some years we've had very good coverage, some years it's been very spotty. So if any of you have any suggestions on how we get the media, and I know there's fewer newspaper reporters here than there used to be. And
that's true.
Yeah.
I would ask Tallahassee Magazine or 850, will you be a sponsor of the event and give us a one-page ad in your magazine? We'll list you as a sponsor. You guys come cover it, take picture, you know, do something that is like a partnership with them, and they do that all the time.
Okay.
Tallahassee Magazine, you know, I would start with 850, because I think one of the things that we have to do, and I was thinking about this as we were working on that press release, is we have to really position the park as a regional asset, and it's not just about the people that are in Tallahassee, but it's about our larger region and what we can bring to that, because it may be that we begin to try to get people to, you know, maybe people who work at the park are living in Quincy or they're living in Bloodstown or, you know, someplace like that as we begin to think more regionally.
Okay.
So.
What are the grants? 25,000 total?
Total's 25. Yeah.
Total 25.
Usually 15 for first and 10 for second.
Maybe we somehow pitch this to the community, say, help us give away $25,000. I don't know how you pitch it, but. Whatever catch that you could somehow entice people who hadn't come here before to think of being a part of our audience and voting.
It would be, you could do a little, you know, competition outside of it that says these are the products that are being pitched. Vote on, you know, there'll be some other voting other than what happens actually at the event.
Like a social media one?
Yeah, like a social media competition or something like that.
Okay.
All of that takes work and time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I might suggest you talk to the airport authority too. Might be a good partner. And I'll secondly, their board is comprised of representatives from three or four of the surrounding counties. And that'll get you outside of Tallahassee, Leon County.
And John Fleming is on that board, I think, and he has a good PR background. He worked for me for a long time. He would be a good person to just kind of brainstorm that partnership.
Okay.
I have some ideas.
Last thought for the event, and we all know how busy everyone is. If you haven't been to the tech event, please, I mean, if we can turn out in force, if we're that fourth spot, I don't know if it, I mean, chairman speaking or someone else talking about, I mean, if we don't have another video, maybe we hear about the grant by then or something like that. But if we can have a good showing of board members, that may be another way to kind of show them who we are and engage the dialogue after the event.
The name badges for everyone.
So. Yeah. Okay. I would like to encourage each of you to try to put that on your calendar and be there. In the past, we've had 2-3 board members, sometimes 4, but certainly nowhere near a majority of our board members present. We will identify you in the meeting, so please come with your smile on and your name badge, and be prepared to scatter out and sit at different tables and talk about Innovation Park. Nobody can tell a story better than we can. So,
this is our marquee event. I mean, it's been very successful. We do get press out of it. I know it's been sort of hit or miss at times, but I can't tell you how many people tell me they're looking forward to the next one. I mean, it's where else do we get 125 people in a room talking about Innovation Park?
We also provide free food and alcohol.
That's good.
Hey. You know what else is? You have these PR firms who are helping them get ready to present. Maybe we just need to bring them together and have a brainstorming session with some of them, like as soon as possible, to see what other ideas can come up, and we'd be able to host that at our office if
awesome.
We want to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to be reaching out to everyone next week, so I'll get everything going.
Okay,
thank you. Mm-hmm.
I'd hate to have to call a special meeting of the board of directors 1 hour before the attendance meeting. So, all would be there and support this event. But let me encourage you to support the event. You know, I guess I'd say if we call that extra meeting and you don't come, then you miss your director's fee. I don't know. So
you have to come over.
All that money. Right.
And Melissa did point out that y'all are supposed to sit at different tables and not talk to each other about anything that has to do.
That's right.
Yeah, please.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Nothing of substance.
That's right. Just the weather.
Anything else regarding our discussion on tech grant night?
Oh, I will be needing volunteers too. So if you can't come, it would be great to have some people from your office or anything. Last year it was really just Peggy and I getting things ready, so we really do, and Michael a little bit.
Michael's
so
a judge.
We really do need the help ahead of time as well. If you can, or if you can get somebody to come and help, it would be really appreciated.
I got there too late to help on the front end, but I did help pack everything up on the back end. So.
Appreciate that.
Let me thank Peggy and Denise for the things they did. Peggy provided all the floral and decorations and all that stuff from her own inventory of stuff, and did an excellent job of making it really look festive. Also worked the name tag table and all that good stuff, so we can use volunteers, and I'm sure that Peggy would be glad to take your name down. One more time, the date.
It is May 16th. The event will start at 5:30 p.m.
May 16th at Goodwood?
Yes.
Okay. If one thing I can promise you, if you get there early, you get the best parking.
One last thought. Volunteers, you've had robotics club, the high schoolers in the past?
They did not do it 2 years ago,
right,
or last year.
That's what I thought, yeah. I'm wondering about Youth Leadership Tallahassee and Leadership Tallahassee. They partner with Village Square and help set up a lot of the Arton events, things that city and county participate in. YLT was just out here this week at MagLab, and those kids will be wrapping up their year about that time. They're looking for others. I mean, they'll be applying for YLT spots on different boards, things like that. So it might be a good time to capture both of those, to check with Barbara Boone and see if they'd be interested in participating in this.
Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
Great. Thank you all. That's great.
Yes. I don't know whether there are other little organizations in town like, what's the board you sit on? At,
Junior Achievement.
Junior Achievement that would have interest in having their members here, or I don't know. But
we have a hard time getting them to come to our events.
Science clubs in town, I don't know what they might be. There's an economics club in town.
Boy
Scouts,
Girl Scouts.
Yeah, there's a lot of organizations. Perhaps we could say, send us your young people and let them become aware of how this community does try to advance itself.
Speaking of Junior Achievement, well, since you mentioned that, Junior Achievement has a what they call a shark bowl, which is a mini pitch night for high school students. So they reach out and teach basically the Lean Business Model Canvas concepts to all high school students in Leon County, all public high school students in Leon County. So we reach about 1,500 kids. Each school has an event. In each classroom they have a little pitch event. The winners of the class go to this assembly in the high school, and then the winner from each high school then pitches at the event, the big event, which this year is going to be held down at the Jim Moran School, and we've added Sale High School to the mix. So they were jealous because they weren't participating. So now we have six high schools involved. I guess we'll have six finalists now. And it's a lot of fun to watch these kids get up there and pitch their ideas. And then some of them aren't all that original, but the last year's winner actually started a business, and they had a business, and it's kind of a trash concierge service. So if you live in an apartment complex and you want somebody to take your trash down to the dumpster, they have a regular schedule, and they'll come pick up. You set your trash outside the door, they pick it up and take it down to the dumpster. So.
Well, that sounds like a trash
right up your alley.
I don't know if they do recycling, but so they take it down to your dumpster anyway. So that is in April. I don't have the date off the top of my head, but I'll look that up. We can get that to you another time. But watch our we do help promote it. Innovation Park helps promote that, so you should see it in the newsletter when it's ready to be announced. And also we have sponsors from FAMU sponsors, FSU sponsors, and TCC sponsors the event as well, and we give them like PR to all of the Leon County School parents through their communication system. We also provide the students with information from those schools, so we're very connected into the schools.
Someone mentioned Jim Moran School of Entrepreneurism. Boy, that would be a good one to connect with as well, I think. Lots of good suggestions. If you have any new ones or additional ones, make sure you let Denise know, or Rod, either one. Further discussion on the tech night, pitch night, discussion on the elevator, whatever. Those in favor signify by... Well, there's nothing to vote on. I'm sorry. I kind of get wound up. All right, now we're going to have some discussion on the strategic plan.
I'm when you threw that ball, we're going to catch it.
Yeah. Fortunately, I was in the outfield as well. I want to particularly thank Ray Bye for some real good, savvy, I guess I'd say, evaluation of some of the stuff we did in the strategic plan. And then he came back with some suggestions that were really, I think, right on, and some organization of it and some ways to lay it out. So, I want to thank you particularly, Ray. Ron, do you want to take this discussion to start with it?
Sure. I thought it might be easier to look at this in a PowerPoint than trying to work through that Word document. So basically everything that you see in here is in the Word document. So I think one of the big things that Ray brought up after the first list I sent out was that we had a lot of action items in there and not really a whole lot in terms of strategy. So the action items are kind of point the direction of what those strategic or strategies ought to be. So what I try to do, and with Ray's help, we sort of summarize those into these areas. Now, Ray had something, had a little bit of variation to this, but what I tried to capture was the way we talked about it in the strategic planning session in terms of the five or four major areas we talked about, and that was the incubator, the asset maximization and readiness, the marketing recruitment, and the partnerships and collaboration. The resource assessment piece kind of came later when I sent that out. I had that last bullet said issues, okay, and Ray interpreted those issues correctly as we need to understand our resources better, because obviously all of that's going to impact our decisions and the rest of the strategy planning execution. So what I thought I'd do is just walk through each of those sections in more detail. And again, this is all straight off of the Word document. But obviously the incubator development kind of broke down into two categories. The actually development of the incubator, the construction equipment, everything it takes to get it open, setting up the nonprofit and all of that. And then the other component is, what do we do with all of our programs?
Ron, hold on just a minute. Thomas, do you understand all what we are trying to put together here? Have you been briefed on that?
Yes.
You know about the incubator and our tech grant request for $18 million, or 10.2, I guess. And
he sat in on the orientation session with the mayor.
Yeah, all right, good. Okay. Excuse me.
Thanks. So, again, these are the major items that we talked about. I try to make sure that I captured every action item that was brought up. There may be a few additional items that were sent to me later. There are some things in here that staff has thought about in terms of action items. And Ray, anytime you want to jump in and talk about your thoughts, but I'll just convey them as I go along. But one of the things that Ray had mentioned was that in terms of what we approve today, it's probably more important, and I'm paraphrasing, it's probably more important to look at approving the big strategy items than trying to approve all of the action items involved. There ought to be another step where we come back with the specific action items that require the board to, you know, sort of get into the weeds a little bit more. So I think that's the objective for today, is to say, what are the big strategy items that we're approving? And again, those are the items that were on the first summary. The things that you see with the boxes around them, those are also strategy items. So as we go through anything with these little numbered items, those are actually action items. So I just want to make sure you understood that we weren't eliminating any of the ideas that you had, but those will have to come back probably for further consideration down the road. So these are all of the pieces and parts related to constructing equipment and opening the incubator. Obviously, the nonprofit piece is what we just talked about. So you can see there's still a lot of work to do on that. And again, this is not all encompassing either. So it doesn't mention, for example, that we have to go do the 501c3 application. But again, this was just capturing the ideas that you presented. Any questions on this piece? And I'm going to, like I said, I want to step through each of the sections.
Just briefly, you've got to consider second part LCR DL offices. Is the idea that would be an additional to, say, the 40,000 square feet of actual incubator space, or is that part of it?
That's a part of the consideration. That's the question. This is an idea that Mr. Ramsey had presented.
So it'd be a partial second floor, just over a
partial.
Yeah, just a partial second floor.
Over the administrative section, and would be downstairs.
So one of the questions is going to be, does it make sense for our offices to be in two places? Should we just have Michael have an office in the incubator and the rest of us someplace else, or Michael and an admin? So there's certainly an economy of having us all in the same space. So,
and we could share conference rooms and things like that. That would be perhaps more advantageous than having those in two different locations.
But you raise a good point, and that is that we're not sure how the EDA would look at it. We're not sure how our funding partners would look at it in terms of, you know, they're putting money in towards an incubator. And if this is LCRDA moving into it, then is there an additional cost? And is, again, how's EDA going to look at it?
The program administrator needs to be in.
Well, and then that's certainly true. But does the rest of LCREA operations need to be done at that in that space? So, I mean, and one of the things you just approved in the consent agenda was the maintenance and repair items for the Collins building to get up to speed so that we can move our offices over there, and also so that we can go ahead and start the incubator process over there. So while this incubator is being constructed.
But that doesn't necessitate building a second floor.
No. So what I'm saying is we will already have a relatively new office over in the Collins building. We'll be out of here. We won't have to move over there to the new incubator. We'll have space. It's just a matter of if it makes sense to be in two places.
One of the thoughts is we're not in that space over in the Morgan building. Is that the right
Collins.
Building?
Collins building.
That's more space to lease.
Right.
And, well, that's true. So that's more revenue. I see that space that we'd be occupying over there is eating up some of our revenue potential. Now, on the other hand, it's going to cost some money to put a second floor over there, but not as much as a second building.
I mean, you could use this conference room for everybody in that incubator, too.
Yes, correct.
For secure time for a meeting.
Yep.
You don't have to build two of them. I mean, I'm a little concerned about the comments you made that people who are contributing to the fund to do the incubator might be upset if we were using the space for our offices. I can be sensitive to that.
Yeah.
I get it.
And that's why, again, going back to the these are action items that will have to come back later. So, and that's why it says consider. Because when we go through the, number one, getting the grant funds and seeing what the specific requirements are and whether or not we have the flexibility to put any kind of extra office space in there for ourselves, you know, what their requirements are, I have not seen anything like that. And then again, having a conversation with the funders on how they would view that. So again, we're going to have to come back when we go through the grant process going or finishing up with the contracts and all of that, and then doing the architectural design work. Michael and I think in particular, are not in favor of second floor, simply because of, you know, if you're required to have an elevator, you know, the expense and of putting it in, the maintenance and operation, as I've seen with our other elevators, it's not cheap. I just don't know if it's economical for us to do that. Certainly, it makes sense to have what would be typical, which is the have Michael and an admin person over there, but it doesn't necessarily require all of us to be over there.
If you're going to have a receptionist on that first floor, though, they could double as a receptionist for our administrative staff as well. There are some things that have been, and I only saw this as sort of a 20% coverage of that full floor plan. So you wouldn't have but a portion of the second floor, not a full coverage of the building.
And there isn't anything that says it has to be a second floor. I mean, LCREA could have space on the first floor, yeah, and share conference rooms and all of that. It might be a matter of how we structure the lease, for example.
And you could build it right behind the building. Mm-hmm.
Right. Anyway, this is what we're talking about. Yeah, this is.
I won't be with the group.
This is what we're talking about. We'll come back for further discussion about these kind of details. This is not something we needed to settle today, but again, we're particularly focused on the stuff in the blue boxes, and the details are things that we'll come back and fill you in on as we flush them out a little bit. I just want you to be able to see that we didn't drop any of these items, because I know David was very deliberate about putting consider second floor LCREA offices in there. I want to make sure you understand we haven't dropped any of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, wetlands are not adjacent or up against the back wall of the building.
It kind of is.
Just adding,
it's close.
It kind of is. Oh, yeah. They got a retaining wall. But would it be fair to say that there are certain items, numbered items under each, that you've already got direction from the board to execute, they may not come back, and then there are other items like consider a second floor,
yes,
that will come back. So in approving this, we kind of know based on our past conversations what we've already given authority for, direction on, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
For example, on the covenants and restrictions and the PUD. We know that's something that we've got to get done.
Yeah.
It's listed here again. It's kind of carrying over from the previous strategic plan. But and then obviously anything that requires expenditures of funds that's not in the budget, it's got to come back before the board anyway. So
I just wanted to clarify that because looking at the list, it can look very different, to things that need more dialogue in the future versus others. So we're not making a final decision on those things that have to come back at this point. Yeah.
And even on the CNR and the PUD, we can still work on those things and get them done and bring them back have to come back for approval anyway. So
do we have any rough idea, wild idea, what equipping the incubator might cost, a range or something?
Yes, we have a rough idea.
Yeah. Michael's been working on that list.
And the rough is?
$236,000.
Okay.
And $726,000.
And we hope that some of that can be, we can find donors for it. Sponsors for or something? Or
yeah, I was going to say it in the report, but I just submitted a grant application for $100,000 of that with an organization that will fund equipment. And I also have been contacting several of the medical tech device manufacturers to see if we can get some things donated. And I just applied for a grant yesterday to one of them in New Hampshire for one of the very expensive pieces of equipment, and they're very well known for their equipment, and it was a contest to see who could write the best reason for them giving it away.
Nice.
So I did that yesterday as well. So the equipment part of the equation is identifying it with the various stakeholders. There's more to do when we get down into the weeds on exactly what centrifuges they need and what microscopes and things like that. But in general terms, I went through the average costs of the things that I think we need to equip it, and that's $236,000 and probably plus.
Yeah,
less than I thought it would be, Michael.
I think that's low as well. I think, I don't know why, just $1 million sounds about right to me. And
I apologize. I was talking about for the cell culture lab and the shared equipment, not the machine shop, the wood shop.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Now we're getting closer to a million, baby.
Yeah. I did 3D printers and some other things that would be more
generic. Yeah, so we're working through that process right now, trying to figure out exactly what's going to go in there. But my guess is probably going to be all in at least $1 million. A lot of it will also come down to what is the EDA considered part of the building and what's considered equipment. Are fume hoods equipment? Are they, if they're built in, or is that part of the building? Stuff like that. So it's hard to nail it down just yet until we see more of the specifics of what EDA is going to pay for.
Countertops and all like that might be part of the building.
Yeah, I'd like to have all the furniture built in and just make it part of the building.
Yeah.
You know, all the office stuff. Because, otherwise you get into moving furniture around all the time every time a tenant comes in, especially the types of tenants we're talking about, if it's all fixed.
They don't move.
Right? No, I'm not talking about wet lab stuff. I'm talking about office space and offices and things like that. So we're getting in the weeds, but there are a lot of different considerations in terms of what's going
on. Okay, go ahead and continue.
So on the program side, we've all talked about the collaboration piece. We know we've got to do that. Michael's been working on that and having discussions with the different providers in the community. We're also talking about how we can map out our own sort of end-to-end education strategy. What are all the different classes? Rather than having a bunch of one-off classes, that there's actually a process that you go through to do some basic entrepreneurial education, get an idea. Maybe matching people, potential entrepreneurs with existing technology that's out there that they can license and maybe developing a business around that. So the whole process from end to end. And that would involve taking a hard look at EEP, for example. And now that we see a lot of different things going on in the community, is EEP properly positioned? Should it be something different than what we're doing right now? Should we be taking all comers, or should we be strictly technology focused? Because now you've got things like TCC Spark program, You've got what DOMI does, particularly on the IT side, but they also have some very general education components. We think that we should be using our focus on tech companies and how do we provide them with the right kinds of education components that move them through a process that gets them from the very basic stuff all the way into the incubator. Also looking at the tech grant funding, for example, should that be part of the plan? Is that those dollars ought to be reserved for people that we've already worked through the process with, gotten them into incubation, and now they need funding, or give them funding, they get them into incubation?
Well, I would say that I'd fill it up and then start excluding people.
Yeah. No, we understand.
You write a rule that throws this one out and that one out. Next thing you know, you got an empty building, but it's got everybody in it that we want.
we understand the economics of paying for the building and
supply.
Yeah. And yes, absolutely. The more demand and the less supply, the more restricted you can be. We will definitely consider that. So
you mentioned classroom again. That's another place where we would need a boardroom of our own if we had a classroom we could use for board meetings.
Yeah, and actually we're going to do that over in the Collins building. So part of what you guys approved was to remove a couple of walls that will basically double the size of this room and make it for our classroom with movable tables so that we can configure to have more space for board meetings and space for education. It'll also have a kitchen, a good-sized kitchen, that the actual eat-in kitchen, a big kind of collaboration area out in the lobby. So if we have, if Michael has an event or something, we can set the conference room up classroom style, but then serve food in another area. So there, it's just going to have a little bit more flexibility to it than what we have in this building. Okay. And then last but certainly not least is developing that front door for access to the university assets. We've been talking about that, but that's really going to be critical to the success of the incubator, so that's great on the list there. So on asset maximization and readiness, there really were kind of two areas that we talked about, that, again, maximization and readiness. So how do we get the most out of the assets that we currently have, and what do we have to do to get those things ready for market? So the big three things were develop a renovation plan, because we know there's a bunch of different things we need to do to fix some of the things that are here in the park. And number one was the Collins building, which we talked about. We also talked then, once we move out of here, what do we do with this space? And we had a bunch of ideas that floated around in the last planning meeting. We know we need to update the building facades. We know Morgan needs a lot of work. So we need to just take a look at the whole plan of all the things that we need to get done. And driving a lot of this is we're going to have to, figure out how we're going to fund it. We've got to set priorities on what's the most important things that we need to get done. And so that's part of developing that plan. And then the assessing new facility needs. We have a bunch of ideas for potential new facilities. Again, how do we fund it? What's the priorities?
And you then, want to build a spec building, don't you?
I used to.
What lessons were there?
The young guys have to put them in.
Yeah.
And then the other item was developing a plan for the future use of the land, including identifying the geotech issues that I think you raised that, Eric, that we got all this land, but how developable is it and at what cost? I think Dan Foss can probably relate to that question as well. By the way, nice looking parking lot here.
It's coming
right
out
there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you all came in through off of Roberts. It looks a lot different over there right now. Mm-hmm. Although I have one complaint. Now when I'm driving out of the park, the sun is shining because there's no trees coming in. Like looking back, I can't see. So. And then part of getting the park assets ready to market is the streamlining the development process and requirements. That's where we're talking about. Just because we have experience dealing with developers now, and we understand a lot of the issues that they have, and trying to, whether I'm talking to an architect or an engineer, and just communicating our process. It's, every time I go through it, I'm like, there's got to be an easier way to explain this, because they're used to just dealing with the city, or you got somebody coming from out of town who has no clue as to what we're doing here. So we just need a way to sort of make that clear. We need to be very clear on what kinds of companies that we're looking for to come in here. And so we need to have that conversation. Again, these are all not all done deals, but just part of what we need to get before the board and get some very specific documents laid out. And then the formalized agreement with universities regarding availability of their leased land for private company development. I think this is actually going to go hand in hand with the land use plan. We have had conversations about the possibility of using some of the land that FSU and FAMU have if the right company comes along. Now, the one conversation I had was with Tim Moore, and for those that don't know, I think Tim Moore is no longer with FAMU, is my understanding, or is no longer in that position.
Right.
But I had had a conversation with Tim about the possibility of using FAMU land for a private company if it was someone that was doing something that was somehow related to the university, that there should be some benefit to the university. And I think I don't know if I had the conversation with you and Gary, but I thought we had talked about it. But
Kevin Bennett, how does the guy to talk to?
Yeah, I think it's all going to come down to the specifics at the time, but I'd like to at least get that possibility formalized instead of just casual conversation about it. So that when a prospect comes along and they want land out here and they see the land that we have and they go, oh no, I really want that one over there, that at least we've already started the groundwork for making that possible.
Think cannabis. Big project is cannabis right now.
So again, this is theoretical, but I think we got to at least have those conversations and get that process going. And then if you go back to our conversation at the last meeting, we also talked about where the park fits in the research park models, the different types, and I think we had agreed that we wanted to develop more service offerings and amenities and not just be a landlord. So these are just some of the ideas that came out of that conversation. And then on marketing and recruitment, so again, it's develop a marketing plan and partner with OAB on the recruitment side. We're not going to be the recruiter. It's just not. We don't have the resources to do that, and why would we when OAB has been set up specifically to do that function? But there are ways that we need to partner with them to make sure that we're on the same page, that they're recruiting the kinds of companies that we want, that they clearly understand. This also goes back to the previous item, which was making sure we have a clear idea of what kind of companies we want out here, so that we can then communicate that to the recruiters. But again, the marketing plan we've talked about for a while. It didn't make sense because we really didn't have a whole lot of opportunities to do anything else. But I think we're there now, and we really need to get a very serious marketing plan.
You know, a good place to look for an explanation of what you want is technology park in North Carolina. What's that?
RTP, Research
Triangle.
Yeah,
the Research Triangle. Yeah. They've updated their, I guess it's a master plan or whatever they call it, and added the explanation that we're looking for research and companies that utilize research intensively to develop their whatever they sell. And it worked for them. Their language was really simple language to say. So just as a reference.
Okay. Thank you.
And don't lose sight of sales tax and property tax when you figure what it's going to cost to provide for profit space. Because they'll get you downtown if you don't.
You know this, huh? So you know this, Al?
It's hurt.
Like that Tom O'Neill down in Orlando told me when I was down there on the trip. I said, did y'all ever check into the sales tax ability of an incubator? Oh yeah, we got caught. We had to pay some penalties, and then we got caught up. But once that building goes private, even if you own it or we own it, it's taxable. You got to collect tax on your rent.
And we collect tax on rent in all of our buildings except for exempt entities like the universities and the state. So, which is mostly university and state tenants, mm-hmm. but we do have a few that are private who do collect sales tax on this. Property tax is another issue that can get
what's the,
that one's going to be fun to sort out. But yes.
Well, it's 51%, right? You get 51% rent into private, it flips the bill.
Yeah. So
that was where Hartsfield's opinion. He's not there anymore. Maybe
and that's why I said I've looked at those regs, and it's a tough call. But we haven't, fortunately or unfortunately, we haven't had that problem to worry about. But so. We've had very, very minimal private sector leasing. Although, you know, Dan Foss, even though they're leasing the ground for us, as soon as they develop the ground, then it's taxable. So, whereas, my understanding is Sunnyland was not taxable because of the research efforts that they had going on. So, anyway, that was done. So, yes, we will definitely be cognizant of that. The fourth item was the partnerships and collaboration. This was really focused on the conversation around the airport and the Airport Authority Board. And so we will definitely need to tackle that and see how we can collaborate with them. But then we'll also need to look at other collaboration possibilities. And to steal kind of OEV's concept of a cross-cutting strategy. So basically, I think this cuts across everything else that we're doing. So when we're looking at park assets, we're looking at marketing, we're looking at the incubator, in all of those situations, we really need to think about collaboration and how we're going to take advantage of those possibilities.
Ray, in your opinion, would Airport Authority be open to one of our board members being on their board? And would they, at the same time, then require that one of theirs be over here?
I'm not sure that's the board's decision.
I think that's the mayor's decision?
Yeah. Okay. Or somebody at a higher pay grade than the all right. board. I'm not sure membership on the board is necessary in either case, to be quite honest.
I still run for city hall, but if we got an authority up there, it would change. Yeah.
I think open communication and periodic presentations and discussions with a person here from that our board to their board would be fine, but I don't think membership is a...
Ray, do you or Thomas, either one, know where the Chamber of Commerce study is on a evaluation and recommendation of changing the authority or changing the airport's administration?
The Chamber of Commerce has not done a study and is not doing a study. They are asking the city to do a study. So there's a likelihood that the city will move forward with an evaluation of the potential benefits or drawbacks of changing the governance structure of the airport from being municipally owned to being an independent authority. I think that study will happen relatively soon in the next few months, certainly this year probably. I don't know what it will come back and say. I have my personal opinions about what I think it will say, but I don't know what the actual study will say. I think one important point is that that study will look at governance structure and will not necessarily look at, say, turning over the 2,500 acres of land that the city owns out at the airport. So, I mean, we are, the airport is a top priority of ours, and when we think about its role, for the entire city and particularly for this section of our community, we think often about Innovation Park and tying it in the best ways to tie it in, right? We know that we have 1,800 visitors coming to the Mag Lab every year. They come from somewhere, and most of them are flying through that airport. So we think about it a lot. So I think ongoing communications is vital from both directions. So there will be a study, I do think, probably done this year. The Chamber is certainly pushing for it.
Good. Presented the other day at a meeting I was at. She's been on that advisory committee for 18 years and has been there with 8 different executive directors or whatever we're calling it.
Airport director.
8 out of 18 years. I mean, you swap 8 people. I mean, there's no way to get in. Making
we're looking at that too. That
Ray, any follow up on that?
Just a quick general question. What we've heard today just
and thank you for being here, Thomas, what John Mayer said at our strategic planning meeting, we've got a different communication with the city in the last few months than we've ever had in my 8 years, your 8 years on this board. So I agree with Ray on the advisory committee, particularly if the governance structure might be under review. But I just suggest we lean more on Thomas, you and John, as a conduit to think about how to work with the city more and more. So that it's helpful just to get those updates. But that's where I think things are shifting enough, and it will take some time at the city, that that's really the best thing we've got going right now. So thank you.
Okay. Mr. Executive Director, you have the floor.
So, last but certainly not least, is the resource assessment. And I, in the budget process, and I think at the end of the strategic planning presentation, I identified several concerns that we have, particularly on the revenue side, with some of the leases we have. And how we're, I mean, right off the bat, we're going to be losing IT services in May. We're going to be losing, in a couple of years, we'll be losing $100,000 a year off the DOT lease at Phipps. And there's no guarantee on how long Anthropology will stay in the Johnson Building. So we need to start thinking about these things and how we're going to address them. Obviously, a big part of addressing them is through some of these other things that we're working on, in terms of making the marketing and making space leasable and all of those things, so that if we can get those things going, it's going to help us lease space and solve some of these issues. But we just need to understand, if for nothing else, a 5-year forecast of what it's going to look like, so that we know what kind of holes we got to fill. So that's a big part of this, and a critical one, as far as I'm concerned. So those are the major items that were included in the summary draft plan. Are there any questions? I don't know if you want further discussion about any of those items.
We kicked around a few as we've gone through your presentation. Kristen, I'm going to speak for me, you can speak for yourself, but I think in 8 years I've been here, this is one of the better plans I've seen. I compliment the staff on putting it together, and I thank Ray again for his assistance in working on it. I think it's a challenging plan. I worry a little bit about the revenue of the N2. Those are things that we're going to have to really pay attention to and watch. But comments from anyone else on the board? Yes, ma'am.
So, is this to the point, the document, where it's something that you can work from, Ron?
Yes, absolutely.
In its present form?
Yes. Okay. I'm not saying the action items are complete or any of that, but in terms of the higher level stuff, absolutely.
So your task will be to look at the action items and really prioritize them as to what's going to come forward. We're not going to talk about all these every meeting.
Right.
So
that was quick.
Yeah.
So that's your job.
Yeah. So I've taken a whack at this on the assumption that y'all are going to go along with all this stuff. So... you know, obviously the incubator development is ongoing and perpetual, I think. So, and Michael is obviously tasked with executing a lot of that strategy. So, the Collins renovation, you just pulled the trigger on that. So, it's actually to be advertised in the paper tomorrow. I was hoping you guys would approve it, because if you didn't, I paid a little extra money or something. But I took a chance as executive committee. So I'm trying to schedule that so that we can have the contracts back, the RFP done, the contracts back by the next board meeting. So that's how long that process takes. And then obviously the very next step is the resource assessment plan. We've got to get that right away before we have any sense of what we can do going forward with the other items. So I think it's just really important to kind of see that.
Ron, can you... does that include the leasing of the spaces? Is it, I'm looking for where that is of when these leases come due and...
That's the resource assessment plan.
Okay, thank you.
So that's right there at the top.
Thing we were talking
high priority, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then once we know that, then we can also, the streamline development process and requirements, that's get for Kristen is to get the PUD and CNR done. To get that process going. Because, again, a lot of the other things we're talking about in terms of marketing and recruitment, you're going to need to have those things put to bed and ready to go. Again, this was not extensive thought, but I just wanted to see that we had some thought in terms of what we're going to start with. And the other thing is I don't want to y'all come back and say, get this all done in 2019, unlike the last strategic plan we had, I think, is... But I think these are kind of the way I see the priorities shaken out. Obviously, if y'all think differently, let me know. But does that answer your question?
It does. and you answered my question. If this gives you enough guidance to know what it is you're supposed to really be working on and when, then I think
And most of it's in the near term, and as some of these other assessments and plans.
What am I missing with the colors? The colors?
Just so that they weren't, if they were next to each other, you could tell the difference.
Okay.
There's no meaning.
No meaning.
No meaning behind the
different
colors.
Got it. I like, Mr. Chair, I like the fact that this is a very flexible document. So I don't take my comments as, how are we going to know what you're doing? It's really on the other side. I like this idea of, this is what we know we have to address. And your job is to figure out what comes up when, and to be nimble about it. It's all going to change anyway, in some way or another. So.
I agree, especially the farther out you go.
Yep.
What's the board's desire on the frequency in which staff should then give us a report back on how they stand through implementation of this? We've been doing it, I think, twice a year.
Well, actually,
every
meeting, my report is.
Well, I thought about it in a real detail matter. And maybe that's detail enough if we're doing it every meeting.
And in my reports, I'll talk about whatever strategic item we're currently working on. But if you want, we can do, twice a year, do an update, maybe see the bigger picture.
I think a deeper discussion, even once a year, as we go into, kind of our transition to in the fall, between our fiscal year, everything like that, would be good. But I'll actually expand on what you said. I think the last plan and this one represent a complete shift in the organization from what we saw before, because it's such a flexible, I was going to use the word, living plan, that it is kind of the basis for your ED report every month. I mean, I really like that because we can dig into certain issues that need some support, but I don't think we need to spend a long time discussing, rehashing things, but maybe once a year. But it's so flexible that I think in Ron's report, that's where we really keep up to date with it. That would be my sense.
Well, obviously, reporting just to us at each board meeting is important. I kind of like twice a year. You like the once a year. I could go either way.
That's just for the deeper discussion.
That's
we had to do. Yeah,
the deep discussion.
Yeah.
I think as a board, we really required and expected us to really understand where we are, what we're doing, and how we're getting on the schedule and all those things relative to financial and whatever else. We can discuss that later, but I think there needs to be some expectation, Mr. Executive Director, of you coming to us twice a year, once a year, with a very detailed description of discussion of where this is and how you need to tweak it, if it needs to be tweaked. One of our jobs is to get out of your way, support you when you need it, but hold you accountable. And I think by looking at it twice a year, we'll hold you pretty accountable.
Sure.
Any other comments or discussions? Yes, ma'am.
I have one random thing that I'm not sure is even an option. Look at you, Mr. Williams. But due to sunshine, I was waiting for today to mention it. Saw the article about General Capacitor.
month or so ago. I'm sure there's legal issues there. But if there was, you own the building, there was a lot of work on a dry lab there, it's very specialized. If it comes a point where that space is vacant, you don't have another tenant, I wondered if there was some dialogue to have about helping create, you know, move companies in there through some of our programming aspects. Again, I'm speaking out of school.
That's great, having fun with that.
Okay, we have not talked about it, but I wondered if this would be a lab space that is just sitting vacant.
It's one of very few in the country.
It is. So I just wanted to tee that up here.
I think being so close to Innovation Park and the Mac Lab is one of the biggest assets we've got at Hamlin Park. And there is some conversation with somebody I think might want to take over the operation. Know that the products that were made and break in the test of this were well accepted by the major customer, Department of Defense, and they want some more of them. So I think somebody might just step in.
If you've got another tenant, another company, that's fantastic. If it was a type of space that we don't have, and you didn't have a tenant, I just wanted to.
Well, it was their furniture store when they got it.
Yes.
And they started spending money. They spent over $1 million in that 10,000 square foot space, adding power and doing this and doing that.
So just to orient us, where is it?
Hamlin Park is at the dead end of Jackson Bluff Road, headed west, from there to TCC.
Okay. It's right at Apple Yard, and it's very close proximity to us and to TCC. And again, it's a high-tech space that may be in demand, but I don't know. So I just wanted to tee that up here.
Hybrid lithium capacitor batteries that he invented. So, it's really special.
Well, if you have vacant space, I would hope there could be some dialogue about, and I'm not adding more workload, but like Collins, if there was a temporary space or space where we could start to help meet some of the needs, that's why I want to bring it up.
Are y'all getting any calls from Panama City? No, I'm surprised that somebody over there didn't have maybe they're just not the same need for research.
Well, we have had conversations with the Doolittle Institute, and Michael will probably tell you a little bit more about that in his report, but that's a separate, that's part of the Air Force research something. So they have their own little incubator over there. Other than that, that's the only contact we've had. There's another, what's the other incubator over there?
Tech Farms.
Yeah. So they've got a small incubator there as well. We talk to them, but we don't do a lot together. So
I get their newsletters.
Yeah.
Ron, I think a nice job of putting this together in a presentation form. I compliment you on that. You got a lot of work.
We should give them a little prompter.
Yeah.
You need a vote to
a what?
Been a little prompter, other than. Just kidding.
Okay. Do we need a motion to approve?
We don't have a motion yet. Would you like to make one?
Sure.
We have a motion to approve the strategic plan. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second.
And thank you, Ray.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of adopting the strategic plan as presented by the executive director, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed by like sign, motion carries. All right, we move to that exciting area where the chair gives a report. And at this point in time, I will allow the staff to use my time. And we now have the executive director reporting.
Well, we appreciate that.
I yield.
You yield. Okay. So on my report, I think I gave you a number of updates, and I won't go through all of them, and some of this we've already discussed. But obviously, a big part of what we're going to work on in the next few months is getting that Collins building renovation done. It's a lot of repair and a little bit of modification to the building, but we still got to go through the same RP process and all of that. So the good news is we will not have a evaluation committee of board members. It will be myself and Stephanie Chalet. And if there is a board member who would like to participate, a single board member, we would be happy to have them participate. But we just didn't see the need, given the nature. It's not complicated. It's carpet, paint, ceiling tile. Although the executive committee admonished me to to find an interior decorator with better decorating skills than I have, to make paint selections and carpet selections and all that. So,
did say top four.
I think we looked into Peggy or something.
So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work out, but we'll figure that out. But if there is someone who would like, I saw Ray raise his hand.
I seconded the motion.
Oh, okay. But again, if somebody wants to participate, that's fine. It's not necessary because we will not.
I don't think I need to.
Stephanie and I are just going to basically, it's really a formal bid process. We will not be eliminating anyone. We will be presenting our recommendation to the executive committee, who will serve as the de facto evaluation committee. I'm just trying to simplify the process a little bit. Given the nature of this, we're not going to have to weigh a lot of information or use a lot of judgment. These people are qualified, and they're not, and who's got the best price.
Do you have a sense of what it might cost to get the rest of the Collins building at least rentable?
So if we didn't do any of the major stuff that we talked about, like sprinklers and all that, you're probably talking, that's about 7,000 square feet that we're looking at doing right now for $70,000.
That's cheap.
Yeah.
Really? $7,000?
70,000.
Okay, I was going to figure somewhere between 1 and 200,000.
No, and this is
everything's so expensive.
It's just carpet, paint, ceiling tile, and some kitchen cabinets and some basic renovation. That's it.
AC's in good shape. Electrical's in good shape.
Yeah. I mean, for what we need.
Yeah.
HVAC is an ongoing issue.
You have to replace one HVAC.
It never ends. But the rest of the building is fine. The biggest challenge we have is with dealing with the humidity levels and what it does to ceiling tiles, and is the way the plenum space was designed, and it sucks in warm, humid air, and so we're trying to deal with that and figure out and make sure we get that problem solved. But we think it's just about creating negative pressure so that it doesn't suck the air in and blows up. They might be putting fans in, and we'll sort that out. But that's why we've got to replace all the ceiling tiles, because over time they've all warped.
The cost for the remainder of the space, though, could be dictated by what type of tenant would be attracted to it.
Yeah.
How much they're willing. I mean, we may have to spend more, but it could be 150-ish, 120-ish to get the rest of it up to.
And my recommendation would be that we not try to change the use of the space. I think every potential tenant that I've talked to that wanted to do some light assembly operation or put a lab in or it just doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. They want loading dock and they don't have a loading dock. So the loading dock in, you got to put a drive in. You put a drive in, you got to deal with stormwater issues. I just don't think it makes sense for that building. It's an office building, and I think we just got to figure out how to use it as such. My hope is that we are wildly successful with these 10 offices that we're going to have to lease. And I'll come back and say, hey, we need to structure for another 10 offices in that vacant space and just build out, from west to east, and we'll do as much as we need to at a time. That also avoids triggering other issues like ADA.
Is the insulation on top of the ceiling tiles, or is it exterior to the space?
It's sprayed on the roof.
I wondered if they'd even let you twirl that ceiling out, put it back with the old style.
We're not taking the grid out. We're just replacing tiles.
I don't know if you need a permit for that, do you?
It's the demo. We've got some demo walls. It's got electrical and plumbing. Some plumbing to do for the kitchen sinks and that sort of thing. So we'll talk about it later if you want to know more detail. But maybe you should be on that committee.
We talked just a second about HVAC. And when we talk about our new building, I want to make sure we get Danfoss product at least in the discussion. It'd be no better place for them to have
absolute
people walk somebody over and say, here's a building using our product right now. And so, at any rate, but just keep in mind that we look at that type of compressor.
Last time I went and looked at a Danfoss turbo-force compressor, I couldn't figure out if it was moving. It's just laying there.
It doesn't
make any noise.
Vibration.
On the Central Pond Trail, we have gone into permitting. We had a little snafu with the permitting process and really just getting the permits paid for. Nothing we could do about it. We think we're back on track, but I'm still waiting on the final permit, and then we'll go to bid. So,
I
guess
has that been?
April. They were given a year to get it done, and they're going to take every bit of it and then some. So, there's some other stuff going on. I can tell you offline. So I do think it's going to extend past April 6th, which is their due date, just because of the delays in getting that done. So, but the good news is everything else looks good though. The design's done. Public Works tells me every time I talk to them, oh yeah, no problem, we'll get it done. It's like no problem. So we'll see. On leasing, IT Services extended their lease for 2 more months, which is good because that's about $36,000 in revenue. And also, speaking of IT Services, they are adding a parking lot. They're leasing some space or working out some agreement with FAMU for space down in the power line easement between. So,
mm-hmm. Point that right here.
So this space from here to here. They're going to pave, and it'll be connected to this, so you'll be able to go all the way through. They need more parking for IT Services. They're also going to add a sidewalk from that all the way up to the IT Services building. So we're working through that process. It won't make it to DRC this month. It'll probably be next month. Audit Committee, I want to thank Paul Dean for assuming the duties of Audit Committee Chair. We have the final draft, the preliminary final draft of the audit report completed. It's going through Thomas Hall Ferguson's review process, and then it'll be ready for the audit committee, which basically we'll get that done between now and the next board meeting so the board can have it for approval. And the good news is so far, no significant issues with the audit at all.
Boy, what a change.
So
I compliment staff, I compliment folks over that do our bookkeeping and all, and we really paid attention to the detail, and that's good.
I will tell you, we did find a mistake. So before you think,
before I go too far with that,
yeah, it was in last year's report. We messed up by $3,000, but we're fixing it this year, and so it'll be good to move forward.
That attention and detail, you caught it.
Yes, we caught it. And we caught it. The auditors didn't catch it, so.
That's interesting.
It's always, always better.
That's good and bad.
Well, yeah, it's prior period adjustments are never good. As a matter of fact, I think the auditors would have been just fine if we had passed on it this year as well, but I wanted to correct it so that we can correct it going forward. It has to do with the way we accrue utility expense, which they did catch in the prior year, but they said it was immaterial. But as the amount of leasing has gone up and the utility expense has gone up, that utility accrual kept getting bigger. And then the opposite happened that offset some of that was our leave accrual, so that our employees and their annual leave, we were accruing 100% of their sick pay, their sick leave. And the GASB says you only have to accrue the amount they would get if they terminate, which is 25%. So we over-accrued that expense by 75%. Again, in the past, it wasn't an issue because there were 2 staff people. We had enough turnover. There wasn't a lot of accrued leave anyway. But now that we have 4 staff people and no turnover, that sick leave accruals get higher. So that's the basic explanation. But the net effect of it is $3,000. So we had a... a slip and fall claim in the Morgan building, in one of the restrooms that's accessible from the atrium. We won't have an in-depth discussion of this because of the nature of the claim and not wanting to get into any of the details. But what I'll tell you is that the Melissa's been involved in the process. We have not received an actual claim in terms of a dollar amount. Just basically putting on notice that they're gonna have a claim. Morgan is handling it. Our insurance company has been notified. We have a zero deductible policy to cover that. So to the extent of our policy limits, we're covered. But again, until we have more information report, I prefer not to get into any more of the specifics of that. Other than that, I think that's all I've got.
Questions are wrong. Okay, Mike, you're up.
Yes, sir.
Michael, excuse me. You prefer Michael, I know, don't you? Either way.
As long as every Friday or other Fridays. I'll be whatever you like. I've been working on a number of programs. I think there should be a report in your package. I won't go through everything in detail. We're doing an I-Corps class with the NSF I-Corps class with the Southern Node again out of the University of Alabama. And that'll be on the 13th of this month, next week. Worked with TCC and FAMU to bring a cyber defense program to Tallahassee on March 13th. That'll be downtown. I stepped back from that. They're getting the fame and glory because that isn't in our wheelhouse. But I do have a little past expertise in cyber, so helped them out there, part of our collaborative strategy. Doing another SBIR, SDTR program on March 27th. The EEP class 16 starts April 9th. I have three businesses signed up so far, and I could use more. And speaking on the collaborative effort, the Jim Moran School of Entrepreneurship, GOMI, FAMU, TCC, and Innovation Park are all collaborating on a master database of mentors that all of our partner organizations can access.
Oh, that's great.
And so it's a collective database instead of having to try to siphon off or cannibalize from everyone else. We're going to do a master database, which I thought was a really nice addition to what we're trying to do. Quick note, I didn't get any recognition last Friday on television. Apparently nobody watches the 6 o'clock news on WCTV.
On Friday.
But somehow,
on Friday.
somehow I was on there for a totally unrelated story, and it was a surprise to me as well. But we did do an interview and are expecting a real story to come out about us anytime soon. But that was kind of a surprise. It had nothing to do with the story they were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Was that April 16th? April 9th.
Class 16. Yeah. Yeah. Class 16, April 9th.
And the facility and the meeting place is?
At Tim Williams Technology Center. Oh, I'm sorry. Advanced Manufacturing Technology Center. Also, just that's not on here, I thought I'd update you on that. Some of the things that I'm doing. We'll be applying again for the $125,000 FAST grant for SBIR, SBTR training. You're aware last year that we made it to the very end without a signature from the last signatory. And this year, with Ann's help, we're starting early, and I think we're on a good path to put that in the queue. So I very much appreciate that. I think that's going to be a really good effort. It's $125,000 typically over, it's each year over a 5-year period. And so it could amount to a substantial amount of money for SBIR, SDTR training.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do you have a date yet for when you want to?
Yeah, I know you sent something out this morning, and I could talk to you about that. The timeline for submission is May, and the announcement date is around June 4th. So we have time. I'm just happy we're ahead of it this time, because last time we only had a short amount of time.
We need to talk. I mean, if there's a prospect of going ahead and getting it signed and kind of putting it in the can so that you can just,
That would be very helpful, since that's the last hurdle. And I did get feedback from the principal author of the program, and she told me that we would have gotten the signature.
Is that Does that require us to do anything new or spend any more money of that 125? Or?
So, in theory, yes, but I've already developed the program, so it will in fact be new because we haven't done them yet.
This is different than the one you are doing?
It's similar. I do SBIRS TTR training, but it's at this, let's call it 101 level. This would be a much deeper dive into how you actually respond to the solicitation and write proposals and how to increase your chances of success and what they're looking for and a whole search and on and on and on. So it is quite a bit more, but it's already a pipeline that I started. So in other words, if we did get the grant, we could hit the ground running with it.
Michael, if you ever do a specific update for the board on that, I think you had numbers last year about return on that investment that states that have received this grant see a lot more money coming to various businesses. So that just might help in the future. That was my understanding last year.
Well, the interesting thing about that, and I don't mean to self-promote, but I just found out last week that New Hampshire is the number one state to receive NSF, SBIRS, TTR grants, and their percentage is 28% of applicants get those from NSF, mm-hmm. which is it's the highest in the country. But that was part of the programs that I was doing in New Hampshire across the state, so I'm real happy about that. It's not relevant to here, but at least I have a basis in which to go forward in Florida. Great. I'm also working on incubator logistics, doing the operating plan, entry requirements, membership handbook, and then we talked about advisory group responsibilities. I have about, I don't know, I'll call it 50 thumb drives that I'm combining into a single depository where we can all have access to those documents. So I'll get that out as soon as I can. It's just they're in various places, and I'm trying to compile them all into one. So that's kind of my update. If there's any questions, happy to answer.
Question to Michael.
Thank you.
Michael, let me say thank you to you. You added a new dimension, I think, an additional dimension to our organization. I compliment you on the value you add, and I look forward to many of these things now becoming part of our organization's daily routine.
Well, thank you, sir. I couldn't do it without you guys and everyone in the room, so thank you.
And just to point out, this one-year anniversary was January 29th. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is it real?
What the hell have you been here that long?
It's been a blink.
Yeah, just the other day.
Denise, you have the floor.
Sure. I'm just going to highlight a couple things. Our next Tech Topics event is going to be on March 6th at the Mag Lab at 11:30, so if you can attend, I would really appreciate it.
Wear your name tag?
Yes. And this time, this theme is going to be on superconductivity, and I'm going to have Lance Cooley, the director of the center right across the street in Shaw, presenting, and then I have a couple other ones. I will be sending out a formal announcement and registration next week, so be on the lookout for that.
Typically, what response do you have to that? Number of attendees?
We usually go around 40 to 50, sometimes more, but it's usually around there.
And is there beverages and snack
food?
There's
free lunch and food and...
That's where part of our $10 goes?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's in the budget. So good. So we'll be having NASA, just be on the lookout. To talk a little bit more about Tech Grant, we've spoken a little bit. Of course, it's going to be on May 16th. One thing new that we are doing is for the finalists, which will be announced on March 27th, they are going to be automatically signed up to be part of the upcoming Entrepreneurial Excellence Program that starts on April 9th. So we'll start getting it to be a little bit more techy, hopefully. Applications are due March 4th, so if you have any people that you'd like to apply, please tell them to do so by then. And then the last thing I just wanted to talk about is the MagLab open house is on February 23rd. In addition to the MagLab being open, the College of Engineering is going to be open, as well as several of their facilities like the and HPMI. One thing that Innovation Park specifically is sponsoring is the trolley. So there's going to be three to four different stops, so we can let people get around a little bit quicker and a lot easier. So we'll be doing that, and we'll be having our name on the trolley stops. We will also be on different print materials at the Mac Lab in the College of Engineering. And that is going to be it for me. I'll do it short and sweet.
Questions, please?
Thank you.
And that was February the 23rd, is the Mac Lab open now?
Yes. And then the College of Engineering. And if you watched Survivor and you know the College of Engineering professor who was on Survivor, he is going to be making a surprise appearance at the College of Engineering and having his puzzle there. So, just saying.
So, not so much a surprise.
So, what time is that event?
So, it is going to be staggered. The Mag Lab portion of it, I believe, is 10 to 3 o'clock. And then the College of Engineering is going to have their facilities open from 11 to 4.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Everybody get your calendars out right now and put down that May 16th date.
Yes, sir.
Ron, I would encourage you to utilize board members more in that operation that night in some capacity. I don't know whether they're introducing people or whether they're opening it or closing it or greeters or whatever. But I think our board really needs to be fully participating in that. One other thing I'd recommend we do on these agendas where it comes down to our next meeting date is such and such, I'd like to incorporate the things that Denise has just talked about as dates that we should be aware of and opportunities for the board member to be participating in.
That's a great idea.
So let's try to be more inclusive board members and more supportive of the organization.
Is there any way we can get maybe an invite sent out through email so we can just add to our calendar so that would be a lot easier for us?
Yeah.
And then we could either reject it or accept it, but it'll be on our calendars.
I like that. That's a good
idea.
Yeah.
And that way you keep track of who's coming to different events.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Please respond to those because I think we still have problems with some people responding to invites. Yeah, maybe we'll. Maybe. You can always respond tentative.
Yeah. Okay.
New business. Anything to come before this organization? Yes, sir.
Would you like to have our property manager give her a report?
I would. It is, isn't it? It's D.
There she is.
Property manager report.
Hey, hi, everyone.
Mayonnaise on that part. I'm sorry.
I only have a couple of things to add. FDOT, I mentioned in meetings past that just to keep it in your minds that we're going to have to repaint the Phipps building. However, we came to an agreement we would do a partial paint because it is not full paint, it's not required, which saves us a little bit of money.
Steph did a great job of getting to the right person to make that decision. It saved us, what, 20 grand?
Yes.
So the local person was being pretty adamant about painting the whole building, but we explained the nature of the paint that's on there. Is a long-lasting, what's it called?
It's actually sealed up the building, so it's a very specialized type of paint. It'll last a very long time. It's hard to even paint over it. Mm-hmm. So you would have to get a special, very expensive type of paint to even seal.
Oh, yeah, so, pressure wash, right?
Yeah, that's all we have to do. And then you trim and the fascia and
so the local person was trying to say the contract says you must, and so she got to the right person at the state who said,
"Yeah,
good enough." So we are going to make it look. It needs. I mean, the fascia and soft and all that definitely need it. If you've driven past, it's all faded. And but I just wanted to point out that she saved us about 20 grand.
Thank you, Ron. The other thing was, you guys might have noticed that the Innovation Park entrance signs on Potsdam and Levy. Those got replaced. I just put a picture of those in there.
Yeah.
I got updated with the other signs that we had redone. That's about it.
Anything new to report on the roadway from the airport over connecting in?
Studies are still going on with the Southwest sector, Orange Avenue, and it's moving through Blueprint. There are other things happening with FSU.
Have you noticed how slow Blueprint makes engineered drawings or designs the roadway improvements? Does it seem to you like it's slipping, like the time it takes to go through that process?
That's a conversation we can have. I'll just say I think there's a different pace because we're in transition from Blueprint 2000 projects to 2020 projects. and they've worked a lot in the last couple of years to on the process to start 2020. And they were slowed down with...
So they've taken funding and moved it, basically.
They're closing out one 20-year tax, opening a second, and there's been a lot of public discussions on Gateway, on other things.
What's the point of having that vote 4 years ahead of the tax becoming...
The point was to do all this in this 4 years instead of starting in 2020 and having to structure it as the money's coming in. So it's moving. The last thing I'll say on that is I think it is moving also because we're post elections. So anything in the last couple of years got slowed down for different reasons. So
the demolition that's happening down at where FAMU is going to go through, does that have to happen before the FAMU final phase goes through, or?
There are parallel projects there. One is a city project, and yeah, I'm looking at you, but you don't have to mention this or comment on this, Thomas, if you don't have an update, but FAMU Way is city-run project.
Oh, right. Okay.
Most of that has now been complete down to the last roundabout, and then its connection with Lake Bradford. But there is the Capitol Cascades Park extension. That's a blueprint project. So we have seen maybe the phase three design on that at the last meeting in December. So we may get another update for the February 28th meeting. So we could share more on that. But blueprint's managing one side, city's managing the other, and they're parallel coming down.
So what's the expected completion date? Does anybody know yet?
I'm going to have to look back. Let me get an updated one by February 28th. We should have our blueprint agenda next week, and we could get
just
an updated.
Curious.
Ron email all us what the date is, right?
I will get.
Yeah, to Ron and then.
Ron,
what demolition are you referring to?
Was it wastewater?
That little treatment
plant.
Yeah, which is phenomenal that the city decided, and this was a decision made years ago, but I remember touring that plant in grade school.
I've been here.
It's been here a long time, so it needed to get cleared out anyhow. So what the city does with that property, it's part of the FAMU Way expansion, but we may be able to get an update through Thomas, you or the mayor's office on it if and when there's any.
I don't have one today, but we're trying to get one.
I'll take up the blueprint update if you want to, if you have any information that can be shared. The city may not have an idea of what's next on that property other than the road expansion.
FAMU Way is my favorite road.
It is so helpful.
And any of you coming over this way, it's great.
Oh, it does. It makes a big difference. That's the way I can get here from.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, it's so nice.
I did encounter someone who was crossing the roundabout diagonally with a walker.
When you come up on something like that, first thing you're supposed to do is honk.
Knock him over with the sound.
All right, my objective is to get you out of here by 1 o'clock. We started 6 minutes late, so we're going to be 3 minutes ahead maybe.
Actually, we have to 1:30. Officially, so if any
not when Dave's
running. My get you out of here 1 o'clock. Any new business? We stand adjourned. Thank you all for your participation and your involvement. Keep these calendar dates in front of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.